Okay, you are in tune to Women's Focus here on KUNM. My name is Carol Boss, and today we continue the ongoing series I began in February called Revolutionary Soup. I just decided to nickname it Rev Soup. So Rev Soup is a series of conversations with a great variety of guests about our evolving relationship with food and the people we eat with or do other things with. And we've had lots of people on so far, and I'm kind of liking it a lot, and it sounds like from some listeners' responses, some of you are as well. And today I welcome three women who have just hustled to get here from both the Downtown Growers Market and Los Ranchos Market, where they have been since the wee hours of the morning selling their produce to the ever-beckoning crowds I think they continue to grow at the markets. And joining me is Christina Profazi, who has a presence at Los Ranchos every Saturday morning. She brings with her an abundance of produce, not here at the station. She just brought a couple of samples, but I mean she brings to market an abundance of produce. I wish she brought an abundance of produce today, that she grows on her small organic farm, which is called Zia Manana Harvest in Albuquerque's North Valley. Also joining us is another Los Ranchos regular. I guess I can call you a veteran in that sense, Denise Wheeler. She backs up her 1950. I was going to guess 57. Her 1950, is it a Chevy?
Yep.
All right. She backs up her 1950 Chevy pickup and pulls down the tailgate, and out come the veggies and fruits she lovingly grows also in the North Valley. It's a very cool truck. And I also welcome Gail Fischel. She is a co-proprietor of Exotic Edibles of Edgewood. I don't know if that quite flows off the tongue, but I like the E-E-E, Exotic Edibles of Edgewood, the home of locally grown and pesticide-free oyster mushrooms. I bet you didn't think I was going to say that, mushrooms. And she just spent the morning, as she does every Saturday, at the Downtown Growers Market. So thank you, all three of you, for being here. I'm very excited to have you here. And I thought I'd begin with Christina. Christina, this is her first year selling at the market. I met her a couple of weeks ago when I was at Los Ranchos, and I was drawn to her beautiful greens. And we talked a little bit, and I learned that she grows several Asian greens, among other items. And I asked her if she'd come and talk specifically about them today. And one thing that really excites me, Christina, is that there seems to be a growing presence at growers' markets and in general of young farmers with a real excitement and a real commitment. And you're one of them. And I was drawn to you and your excitement and sharing. You chit-chatted and you do real well at doing that. So I wanted to ask you, basically, if in fact you are, and I want to ask this of all of you, if you're noticing a growing market for the markets, more people coming, and also a growing, are you noticing like young comadres and compadres?
Definitely.
Yes. Yeah.
The most farmers markets put out numbers of their attendance each week over the years, and you can see it's steadily increasing over the years. And the first Los Ranchos market, there were 1,500 people in 4 hours. So the people going...
You mean the first one of the season?
The first one of the season on May 7th. So people are coming, and it's growing, and people are catching on to the value of organic produce.
So how did you catch on? Are you still in your 20s?
Yeah, yes.
So how did you... What drew you to... Did you do backyard gardens, or...
No, I...
Because you're doing this big time.
Yes. I have a pretty funky story. I actually studied engineering at Purdue, and I graduated and I moved home here, Albuquerque, and I couldn't find a job. So I was...
How long ago was that?
2009.
Okay.
In December. So I was looking for a job and I couldn't find anything, and I came across on Craigslist a full-time internship at a farm on a whim. So I took it. I just did it. And I ended up absolutely loving it.
Was it an organic?
Yes, it was an organic farm. So I learned everything I know now. I had no experience farming, gardening, none of it. I mean, I rarely bought organic vegetables. So I just did it, and I loved it, and I agree with it morally, ethically. And now I own my own farm.
And so you changed your way of eating?
Yeah, definitely. In farming organically, I learned what happens non-organically, what people aren't doing.
That's scary, right? When you really, really pay attention to what happens non-organically.
Yeah. I learned about all pesticides and herbicides and all sorts of stuff. So it was an easy switch to change.
So did you say that was a funky story?
It's pretty funky, I think.
Yeah. Engineer turns farmer.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Did your engineering skills come in handy?
Oh, yeah.
Like in what way?
Oh, yeah. Setting up irrigation.
Yeah. Oh,
definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
To think about water flow and pressure and diverting water and just how to design it efficiently. It came in handy. I was able to think it clearly and visualize the results. And it does come in handy. It makes me think in efficiency terms. You know, how can I solve this problem? And, okay, right now I have this problem with my PVC. How do I fix it? What do I do? And it's just me doing this, you know, so I have to figure it out.
I'm also meeting a number of people like yourself who you can have your own farm, but you don't have to have your own land. And you call yourself a tenant farmer, I think you told me a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that means that I found land who somebody else owns, basically a fallow or a vacant piece of farmland that's not being used. And I come in and farm the land, prepare the land. And the landowner will usually qualify for really amazing property tax reductions. And I pay the landowner basically in vegetables. I pay vegetables, I pay in water or electricity costs and just a few small things, but the benefit is that I don't have to come up with a couple $100,000 to buy land to start a farm.
Right. No, that seems like it's very beneficial to all concerned.
Yeah, it is really kind of symbiotic relationship.
So we're going to get back to talking to you about your beautiful vegetables. Okay. I want to just talk to Gail and Denise for a while. If you just joined us, this is Women's Focus. My name is Carol Boss. This is another edition of Revolutionary Soup, and I was just talking to Christina Profazi, I love that last name, who is a new farmer in the growing community here in Albuquerque and just started, I think, this last fall and seems to be doing very, very well. And Denise Wheeler, on the other hand, who's doing very well, is has much experience, and you have a sizable, you have a house and property in the North Valley, and you've been growing for how many years? How long have you been doing this?
I've been growing in Albuquerque for about 19 years.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start going to the market?
I started going to the market when it first started, which was about 18 years ago, and there was very small number of us, and it was free for sellers, and it's just grown since then.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's a lot of sellers, and more and more, as you were saying, people are coming, and a different variety of people are coming. It used to be sort of people who just lived in the neighborhood or people who are specifically looking for organic produce, and now there's just all assortments of people. And a lot of, like, I met some people who had just come in from Phoenix. They think it's very cool here.
Temperature-wise.
yeah. So, you know, people are bringing family and friends who are coming in from out of town. So it really is expanding. It's great.
And this is not the primary thing. I mean, this is an important part of your life, but this is not what you do for your living.
No, I work for the university for my living for 136 more days.
Oh, my God.
Awesome.
Denise is about to retire.
Yes.
Look at girl you. Also, Denise is I haven't heard you talk about this. I don't know if, are you still doing it this year? Has been teaching through continuing ed at UNM a home repair course, which has been wildly popular, heavily attended by women.
Right.
And are you still doing it?
I have. The class didn't make last semester, and with the new tuition remission cuts for staff.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going to happen, but yeah, I offer a basic and intermediate home repair classes through continuing ed. And then I have a nonprofit building group, which that the truck actually belongs to the building group called CREW, Community Renovation Empowering Women. And we do building and renovating for agencies that serve women and children. And this, we started in 1994. Our first project was to redo the home for women leaving domestic violence situations at Laguna Pueblo. And we've been working since then continuously. And right now we're working at Peanut Butter and Jelly. And it's all volunteer. And everyone's invited to join us, and we supply a vegetarian lunch every workday.
And how can people find out more info?
They can email me at deniserw@unm.edu would be the easiest.
Okay, very good. It's really an incredible organization. I imagine you get some of your CREW from those who went through your course.
I would say 90% of the people in CREW are past students.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're going to talk about, Denise grows a variety of things, and when I was at Los Ranchos last weekend, she had one artichoke, her
first artichoke,
and I bought it. I was there early, and I bought it, and it was small and lovely and perfect for me. It was just wonderful.
Great.
And also with us is Gail Fischel, I don't know if you call yourself a farm, but you're with Exotic Edibles.
We do call ourselves a farm.
A mushroom farm.
We have a mushroom farm.
Exotic Edibles of Edgewood. So I want to hear your story, Gail, of how you got yourself involved with fungi.
Well, it was something that I never thought I was going to end up doing. We had a good friend who was a mycologist, and he asked us to come up to the Telluride Mushroom Festival with him many years ago. This was probably in 94. And he did a hands-on workshop at Telluride called Growing Oyster Mushrooms on Straw. And we helped him with that workshop and drove home and looked at each other and said, you know, we can do this. And so we started building buildings and making things, and we've come a long ways, and it's just kind of evolved.
Well, how do you grow mushrooms, essentially?
Well, the oyster mushrooms that we grow grow on dead and down trees. So in August, during the monsoon season, you can find them in the bosque on the cottonwoods. But we chop up straw and we pasteurize straw and we put it into plastic tubing. So we're making like false logs, and we punch holes in the tubing, and then they grow out the holes.
So let me ask you, how do you pasteurize straw? What does that mean exactly?
Well, what we do is we do a water bath pasteurization, which actually takes less water than doing a steam pasteurization. So what we do is we use 55-gallon drums, and we fill them with water, and we heat them up to 160 degrees. And then we put the straw in these baskets and put them in the drums, and we cook them for an hour or so. And that pasteurizes them. And then we drain them, and then we put them in a spinner, which is kind of like a big chili roaster, and which my partner made. He took a welding class at TVI. and then we cool it, and then we add our spawn, and then we bag it.
So it sounds like you became serious, like, early on.
Yeah. I kind of got this bug. But, you know, going to the Telluride Mushroom Festival and hearing all these awesome people speak about, you know, how fungi can help save the planet was just really motivating. So,
That's really interesting. Talk a little bit about that, about how fungi...
Well, the wonderful thing about oyster mushrooms is that they eat petrochemicals. So they've been used to clean up oil spills.
Wow.
The huge oil spill that happened in Alaska many years ago, the Valdez oil spill, they were grown onto mats, and then you can float them in the water, and they'll eat the petrochemicals. And it, it spawns a whole ecological cycle because the they actually produce mushrooms, and then the mushrooms kind of start to rot, and you get bugs on them, and the birds come, and they eat the bugs, and they leave droppings which have seeds in them, and then the, you know, then you can get actual plants from that, and so you can create a whole new recovery by using mushrooms.
Well, did that ever come up after the Gulf oil spill?
It did, and we were really trying to get our used tubes down there, but, you know, they're heavy, and what you really need is a truck that goes from one end of the country to the other to get
them. Did you say used tubes?
Yes, yes. The tubes that we take out of the room every week are still viable, but they just don't have enough water in them and enough the mushrooms have basically eaten all of their food. So, but they can, you know, if you float, they'll float on the water, and they're okay with the saline. And so, yes, you could certainly create these, forget what you call them, buoys or
buoys?
Buoys.
Buoys.
That can just float in the water in some kind of netting.
Wow.
And then, and they would absorb the petrochemicals. But there wasn't any kind of infrastructure set up to do that.
You know, this gives me an idea for another show, because this is not what we've come to talk
right.
about entirely. No, I'm glad you're talking about it. It's fascinating, because if people, you know, I don't know who, I read so many different things, and I don't remember who said what and what the source was, but I was reading about, somebody was saying that if we had, a well-known person actually, I can't remember who, if we had monetary rewards and payments for people to use their ingenuity and come up with solutions, if the money was there, there could be this huge shift with many things. And
mm-hmm.
And you talking about the mushrooms reminds me of that, and also about other substances, like healthy substances that could be solving some really large problems. And I'd like to do something on that someday.
Mm-hmm. I highly recommend the book Mycelium Running by Paul Stamets.
Oh, yes.
That's all about how mushrooms can help save the world.
Yeah, he was, or I don't know if he still is, associated with New Chapter, the supplement company that, I don't know if you're familiar with them.
No.
But I am, I've seen that book. I haven't read it, but I have seen it. Yeah, How Mushrooms Can Save the World.
Yeah,
that's pretty.
He's also done something called the Life Box, so where he actually puts mycelium in the cardboard, and you can, you know, fill it with dirt once you get it, and the mycelium will help the plants grow. Those are other mycelium than the ones that I grow, but it's an awesome concept.
So we're going to come back and still talk to you about the mushrooms that you grow. And by the way, Gail and her partner Scott make a mean pate. They are around, Gail is at the growers market, the downtown growers market, and I have seen you at other events like La Montanita's Earth Day.
Right.
You always have samples.
Yeah, and we do the Los Ranchos Growers Market, but we do it in the wintertime.
Oh, uh-huh.
And we do it before the downtown growers market starts. So I'm very familiar with Denise and her pickup truck, which is just awesome.
Yep.
So, Christina.
Yes.
You know, Gail was talking about environmental matters here, and I know by reading some of your blog that means a lot to you as well. And I was reading something that you wrote, I'm looking for it real quickly here now, about fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
How you have made it. You want to talk about what you wrote about and not make me scramble through the paperwork here?
Sure. I use alpaca manure that I get from Albuquerque alpacas, and it is a really great system for both parties involved, because I get free
including
fertilizer.
The alpacas being one of the parties?
Probably, because their pens get cleaned out very frequently.
Hmm.
So I get free fertilizer, and the owner of Albuquerque Alpacas doesn't have to throw away manure, which I see happening quite often at ranches and farms around in the city limits, is that Waste Management just comes and picks up the manure and it gets tossed into a landfill, which I think is awful. I think it's awful. So I pick up the manure and I spread it as manure on the field. And as of recently, last week, I have successfully made what is called manure tea out of manure. So you take the manure and you saturate it in water, and you're basically leaching the nutrients out of the manure into the water. So now you have a water-soluble fertilizer that I can inject, pump into my irrigation lines to give the plants like a little booster shot, a little pick-me-up when it needs fertilizer faster than what would come from the manure just putting it out into the field as manure.
I found what you wrote on your blog. You said, "I've made an executive decision regarding the important problem of plant fertilization." I know. Sounds serious, right? "I've decided to ex-nay, N-A-Y, the very easy and convenient organic," you have in quotes, "option of fish or seaweed emulsions." And you explained how they work, which I'm not going to ask you to do now, and how you have come up with what you suspect is a much better, healthier.
I think it's healthier, it's easier, and it has nothing to do with fish, which is rotted and composted thousands of miles away and trucked over thousands of miles from Alaska or wherever. Mm-hmm. In huge drums that weigh probably 500 pounds. So I don't have to do any of that. I can just make it myself. And it's free, which is really fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you have to build something in order to do
that? No. All I did was put some pallets up to contain the manure. I let it sit there for about a week to cool off a little bit. And then I just shovel manure into bags, kind of permeable bags, put the bag in a 55-gallon drum and saturate it in the water.
Pull it out.
And then I can pull the bag out, which is heavy at that point. But
yeah, I have straw tea.
Yeah. Pretty much it's the same concept.
Do you have any tea, Denise?
No, I have no tea. I have tea. Compost, just regular old compost.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I'm going to get back to Gail and Christina. I want to talk about the actual produce that I asked you to come and talk about today, but this is all so interesting. If you just joined us, this is Women's Focus, and we're talking about three local growers. We've got Gail Fischel from Exotic Edibles of Edgewood, and we have Christina Provazzi from Zia Manana Harvest, and Denise Wheeler. I guess you don't have a name for your...
Actually, I do. It's called Albuquerque Sun-Dried.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I haven't really used it because I had this big plan because used to be so very dry here that I could dry a lot of fruit and vegetables. But now there's so much humidity, I can't dry things outside without making some changes that right now I don't have the time to do. Mm. So.
And I should say that Denise makes these incredible vinegars that she sells at Los Ranchos Market. They're really... What's an example? Name a couple of...
Cranberry.
Which cranberry vinaigrette.
Yes, the cranberry is very good.
Right.
Gail has had some of that, yeah.
Rose petal.
Oh, wow.
Made with the rose petals for my rose bushes. Oregano. And I am making now some... I just forgot the word. But it's a spice such with the tea. It'll come to me.
Not turmeric.
Tarragon. Tarragon with lemon peel and white pepper.
Yeah. Lovely.
So, yeah, that's a really nice one. So
I just wanted to say that last year I made a really nice gazpacho, and I used your cranberry vinegar, and it made it. It just turned out wonderfully.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Cool.
Thanks. Yeah. And they're very nice and very pretty and really nice taste.
So I asked Denise if she'd come and talk about growing artichokes because, I don't know, I'm fascinated by artichokes and I don't personally know many people who grow them. And so is there an art to growing artichokes?
I wouldn't say there's an art, but I think it depends on where you live in town because in different sections of town it grows really well. The North Valley, they grow really well. Downtown, they grow really well, and some parts of the Northeast Heights. People have said that they don't grow well here in New Mexico, but a lot of people, more and more people are growing artichokes. Traditionally, artichokes in the United States came from California or Louisiana. That's where they were basically introduced into the United States. But they're fairly easy to grow. People tend to overwater them or be too protective of them. And what I tell people is benign neglect is the way to grow artichokes.
Benign neglect.
Right.
Yeah, don't
put them in the ground, admire them through all the different stages that they go through, let them stay in the same place, make sure that they have a lot of compost, and water them occasionally, and they'll just take off. And they're beautiful, beautiful plants in each stage of production.
I know. I've seen some of the flowers that you've had at the market.
Right.
They're gorgeous. So I don't know much about artichokes, and I'm going to ask you, when you plant the seeds, do you get a crop of artichokes the first season?
Yes. Well, depend on how well you care for the seed, as in anything. But you can plant them by seed, or you can buy plants. More and more nurseries are carrying artichokes now that they didn't used to. But my first plant I grew from seed, and it was about 20 years ago or 18 years ago or something, and it has just, you know, recreated itself. So it'll send like tubers down and create new plants, or it'll create, when the artichoke, which is basically the bud, that's what people eat. If you leave it on the plant, it flowers. It opens and flowers. It's a beautiful, beautiful, it looks like a purple sea anemone. Mm-hmm. And then you let it dry on the plant, and then that's where the seeds come from.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll reproduce itself if you basically leave it alone. You have to protect it a bit in terms of not really freezing. But if it's in an open field, it'll freeze. But if it's near a fence or near some or trees or something, mine did not freeze. I did lose two or three that were in a more open area. But they'll do pretty well here. And you don't have to do a lot to take care of them. I think they like to be admired, however.
So you still have the original plant that you grew?
No, it died, but I have its great-great-granddaughter.
Oh, cool.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is cool.
That's very cool.
So do you know where artichokes originate from, by any chance?
You know, I actually went on the web and I began to read different things, and everything I read, you know, then I looked at the next web page, it was contradictory. But there seems to be agreement that artichokes developed in North Africa or the Mediterranean. So somewhere in that region. And they're part of the sunflower family, actually. And they're related to thistles. And then depending on, again, which website you read, cardoons are part of that family as well. Maybe distant cousins, depending on the author of the article. And then they came to the United States probably back in the 50s, 1850s or something like that, and mostly have stayed in California, where they do really well because of the air condition, the breeze from the ocean. They like moisture in the air. That their leaves draw in the moisture, and that's mainly where they get their water from. Because if you water them too much from the root, that's they'll rot.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Does everyone here like artichokes?
Yeah.
Because I'm wondering how you cook it. I was talking to you at the market last week, and I said, I haven't had an artichoke, and it's been a substantial amount of time. I can't believe it. And that I have steamed them.
Right.
And you say you put it in boiling water.
Yeah, I put them in boiling water with, you know, chili spices and garlic and whatever. Some people steam them. I sold some smaller ones today and suggested to the people that they just cut them in half and grill them.
Mm. Oh,
because they were smaller, and so they could eat basically the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
So you can just grill them for maybe 6 minutes on one side and 4 minutes on the other side. So, but the one thing that I did in doing this research, what I found was the artichokes were considered a sexual enhancement, and so therefore only men were allowed to eat them. Women were not allowed to eat them.
Now, where was this?
This was
Africa, Mideast?
Africa and the Mideast, Italy, France, England. It's carried down for a long time until about Henry II, where one of the women that he was married to actually brought artichokes with her from Italy, and she loved artichokes, so she was eating artichokes, and it was considered, you know, quite outlandish.
Blasphemy.
But but women weren't allowed to eat artichokes, and it was like,
wow. What?
Why wouldn't you want women who were interested in sex? I can't imagine. So,
you know, the
I thought that was pretty funny.
Have you ever seen some really, like, beautifully photographs, almost portraits of artichokes?
Mm-hmm.
They exude sexuality.
Oh, yeah. They're very sensual plants.
Yeah, very, very much so. How do you eat, or how do you cook your artichokes, Christina?
I have boiled them. I think I may have had a grilled one in my life at some point.
That sounds very good to me.
But mainly I've only had them boiled with just the butter and the,
yeah,
you know,
mayonnaise or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, same here.
I'd like to try something new, though.
Well, I steam them, and I like to put them in olive oil that has whatever spices I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
I love mayonnaise, but I never buy it.
Yeah, it's bad for you.
Except I've been craving it. Actually, when I ate the artichoke this last week, I thought, I wish I had some mayonnaise.
Mm.
Christina, I know you don't just grow. You grow a whole bunch of stuff. In fact, we should mention that you have a CSA.
I do. I have a community-supported agriculture. I have a weekly harvest box, which the pickup is available at Los Ranchos Market.
And you want to explain briefly what a CSA is? It's very ambitious for you to just start growing and have that right away. It's really great.
In a nutshell, it is, I kind of like to call it an investment
program. You
mean
in a harvest box it is?
Items in a harvest box?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm just joking with you.
So it's kind of an investment program in putting your faith in me as a farmer. And you pay me for a subscription for a certain length of time, usually about 6 weeks. And I grow food specifically for you for the next 6 weeks. And I bring food for you. And, for example, this week in the harvest box, I had beets, chard, arugula, kale, garlic, onions.
Wow.
Basil, and something I'm forgetting.
You do this all by yourself? All this?
Yes. I do. I have volunteers who help me. I have a market volunteer.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
But, yeah.
As far as the farming really goes, I do most of it myself.
Yeah.
And I also sell at the farmer's market, but my main interest is the CSA because it really helps people try new things. You know,
right.
It's kind of kind of like a guided tour of vegetables. Like, today you're going to eat chard because I'm giving it to you. So you're going to eat some chard, and I give recipes. A lot of people a lot of people struggle with, like, what is kale? A lot of people don't know. So I provide real quick and easy recipes to help people out and help them eat it. And just quick little facts about each vegetable and nutritional benefits and why they should eat it.
Mm-hmm. Well, to tell you the truth, a couple of weeks ago, I was really disappointed when I was down. And that's when I first saw you and met you. And you had these beautiful greens. And I asked you what was it. And you tell me tatsoi, which is an Asian green. And I couldn't buy one because you only had enough for your CSA harvest box picker-uppers who are going to be at the market. But I want to ask you about Asian greens because I am fascinated. I mean, there are some that many people know, like bok choy. Mm-hmm. You sell pak choy, which is
pak choy. Close relative.
It's a close relative.
Same family, different color, a little bit more tender.
Yeah, it's very...
Not as chewy.
Charming looking, actually.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful plant. The whole family of choys and chays and cabbages and... They're all really beautiful plants.
How did you get into them? I see more growers now. After I spoke to you, then I started noticing that there are other growers also who are doing Asian vegetables.
Yeah. The health benefits of them are just astounding, first of all. And it's one of these items that I can put in the harvest box that's not too crazy. You know, people are still comfortable with it because it's... close to spinach. You cook it like spinach. You eat it like spinach. But it's something new and not too out of the box. And, I mean, the health benefits of these kind of greens are just amazing.
For example?
You know, calcium, the detox properties of most Asian vegetables are just amazing. Potassium, crazy, crazy potassium up there. Vitamin A, usually, like, I know kale's not really an Asian green, but like 500% of your vitamin A for the day. I have faith in greens. They're really one of the best things you could eat all the time.
And some of them, would that include the choys that are in the cabbage family?
Yeah, in the cabbage.
So they're, whatchamacallit, vegetable, crusa, C-R-U-C-I-F-E-R-O-U-S, the ones that are loaded with fiber and...
High fiber, low fat, low cholesterol, low everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say probably everything in the brassica family, broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage.
Right, exactly.
All of those are just up there.
Well, the tatsoi really got me because they're beautiful.
Yeah, the plants themselves are so great. They're just, I found out on the internet that bok choy means spoon leaf, because the leaves of all of these family, this plant in this family are very spoon-shaped. So it's just a beautiful-looking plant. It kind of looks like a vase of flowers, I think. It kind of tapers at the top, and it's short and skinny on the bottom. Very nice-looking.
Yeah, I discovered that. I was looking online, too, and they said that pak choy, its other name is spoon cabbage.
Spoon cabbage.
Yeah. Very, very nice. Gail, let's get back to mushrooms.
Sure.
Cool.
Oyster mushrooms.
Yes, oyster mushrooms.
Wax poetic about it.
Okay. Let's see. They are actually a really good source of protein.
Hmm.
They have more protein than milk. They make
no.
a good yes.
Wow.
They make a good meat substitute if you're trying to be vegetarian.
I
they
didn't
have
know
a
mushrooms
nice
had.
Meaty taste to
yes.
them, feel to them. The oyster mushroom is considered a medicinal mushroom, even though it's kind of lower on the totem pole than like maitake or shiitake. But they do build up your immune system, and they have a natural statin in them, which lowers cholesterol. They have been used to treat herpes cold sores. They taste great, and they're very good at blending flavors. I love them in stir fries with other vegetables, but you can also put them with pasta. They're just great.
They're great,
you know,
grilled.
And they're great grilled. The larger ones you can grill, and they won't fall apart because they're a woodier mushroom. So they're a wonderful part of your diet. And they also have trace minerals. They have a lot of selenium, which is really good for us. And then they also can be a good way of getting your vitamin D. Because even a small amount of sunlight on these mushrooms just magnifies the amount of vitamin D that they have in them. It just, like, quadruples it. They've done studies on sunlight and ultraviolet light on mushrooms, and it makes a huge difference in the vitamin D. And it doesn't need to be for very long at all. It can be just, like, seconds.
Wow.
It's just really amazing.
I have a question. Do you grow them in the dark?
No. They like fluorescent light. They like blue light.
Hmm.
So I have fluorescent lights on for about 5 hours. You know, I turn them on in the morning and turn them off in the early evening kind of thing. But you don't need a lot of light, but you do need some light, and they like the filtered light. Now, I have bags that I take out every week, and I stack them, and I'll still get mushrooms out of them, and they're a really dark, dark brown because they've gotten so much sunlight.
Wow.
It's really kind of cool.
So how long from
start to finish?
Yes.
Okay. Basically, it usually takes about 3 weeks for the mycelium to grow out onto the straw, and then they start to pin, where they come out the holes and they look like little tiny pinheads. And then from that time to picking is usually about 4 to 5 days.
Wow.
So the term mushrooming is a legitimate term. Mm. It's just like overnight.
Yeah.
And there have been times when we've gotten rain and those tubes that I've got stacked out, they didn't have anything on them. And then the next day they had mushrooms all over the place. So it's really kind of cool. So, yeah, they're awesome vegetable. They just have all kinds of wonderful nutritional properties to them, and they taste really good. And I think that they add a depth of flavor to other things. Like I've made a cool cucumber soup, and I've added the oyster mushrooms to that, and it just gives a depth and richness of flavor to the soup. And so you can do things like that with them to just kind of add more to what
you're
making.
So how many pounds of mushrooms do you eat a week?
Do I eat a week?
Yes.
I probably maybe eat about 4 pounds of mushrooms a week. I mean, I'm not,
wow.
You know.
I had a feeling.
It's not that much.
It's really not that much, actually, right. You know, if you just put them in everything. I mean, I sell a quarter pound at the market, and that's what most people buy. And it's really a fair amount of mushrooms. It's plenty for two people for a meal. It's a lot more than you would expect.
And then you have that other end of the enterprise, which is making the pâtés.
Right. And what happened with that was that the mushrooms grow in clusters. And so there are larger mushrooms and smaller mushrooms in the cluster. And we trim our mushrooms so that people get, you know, usable mushrooms and they don't have too much to throw away. And so the small mushrooms we end up drying, and we had all these dried mushrooms. We were trying to figure out what to do with them. And there was a local foods festival at the Hubble House in the South Valley. And so we decided that we would try and make pâté and to showcase our mushrooms. And it really caught on, and everybody really liked it and said, you should do this. So we went off on another venture. And, but that we were just trying to use what we had and not throw it away.
So you're doing well with that?
Yeah, that's doing really well.
It's really delicious.
It's, yes.
We have our original, and then we have with chipotle, which is just a little bit spicy. It's not too, you know, in terms of New Mexico, it's mild. It's a wonderful thing there. I haven't found anything else like it, and it's vegetarian, and we use cream cheese as a base, and so it allows people to have something really interesting and special that are vegetarian. Mm-hmm. So
has that become more popular than actually just selling the mushrooms themselves?
Not really, no. Mm-hmm. Not at the downtown growers market, but it is a little bit more popular at Los Ranchos, so... Yeah.
You do samples, right?
And we do samples. Yeah. Oh, yes. We do samples all the time. Yeah. And we have our mushrooms and our pâté in La Montanita Food Co-op in both the Rio Grande and Nob Hill.
Mm-hmm. So before we completely run out of time, I want to give all of you a chance to, for those of you who have websites and phone numbers, if you want to give that out. And Gail, if people want to find out more about exotic edibles, you have a website.
We have a website. It's www.exotic-edibles.com. And we are still currently working on it, but it's certainly there, and it's a way for you to contact us.
And Christina? Fazia Manana.
Fazia Manana. I have a weekly blog, which can be found at ziamananaharvest.blogspot.com. And you can see me at the Los Ranchos Market every Saturday. And you can call me if you want at 505-620-1516.
And the Los Ranchos Market begins at 7 in the morning.
7 to 11 on Rio Grande and Chavez. Osuna.
Right. And Gail, downtown starts at 7, too, on Saturday.
Yes, it starts at 7 and it goes until noon.
Okay.
And we are there every week.
And Denise, I know you don't have a website for this enterprise.
No, just come and see me at the Los Ranchos Market. Once I retire, I might have more time to do things like have a website and have a better garden.
So just look for that... bottles of vinegar for sure, and 1950. Wow, that's 60.
Same age as me.
60-year-old pickup truck.
Cool.
Okay. Actually, we have a couple of more minutes, and then it's going to be time for Raisis beginning at 2 o'clock to take you through the afternoon. I'm going to make this a little bit of a free-for-all. Anybody have something they want to throw out there that they find really interesting about what they're doing? Or even questions for anyone else who's a guest?
One thing I think is interesting, because people were talking about all the things that are in the vegetables, and artichokes are very similar. They're doing studies now on using it as a cleanser for the liver, and it's very high in fiber. But it's just, with all these foods grown in a healthy way, there is so much that, you know, our bodies need, and we can really eat and be healthy by just, you know, supporting each other, supporting local growers.
Definitely.
Yeah. I like the fact that my day is never the same.
Never.
And you have so much variety, and you also need to be flexible, because something happens and you can't to do the inoculation you were planning on doing, and so you have to switch gears and do something else. So that's really nice that you have all of that variety and learning to be flexible, and then also creating things and making things and thinking outside the box and
definitely
that kind of thing.
I want to say one thing that I think in these last few weeks it's the most I've been to. Sometimes I can't always get to a grower's market, especially on a Saturday when I'm preparing for this show. But I have gone a few times since the season began, and there is something actually almost joyous about being at a grower's market, and there's something absolutely joyous when somebody tells you, I just picked that a few hours ago, early this morning. It's unbelievable. And it's unbelievable how much longer this produce keeps in your crisper drawer than the kind that you buy and then the stuff you buy at the stores, mm-hmm. especially certain stores, names of which I will not disclose. But
right.
it's really
I also
wonderful.
Just want to say that I think that part of the local foods movement is that's so great about it is that people being much more conscious of where their food comes from, and the fact that it's not being trucked in from, you know, thousands of miles away, you know, or hundreds of miles away, and that makes a real difference in terms of our environment, and it's just so much better for everybody to eat locally.
I get that a lot, where people ask, oh, where's your farm? And I point them about 4 blocks that way, you know, and the look on people's faces is pretty priceless for me. It's like, oh,
right,
and down the street.
And it's surprising, because I think, you know, if it's been in the crisper for a week, it's getting old, you know, because I picked it, you know, 5 days ago, and it's like, it's not fresh, you know, because I didn't just pick it.
I know.
But
it's,
so there's a really different quality to the food.
Yes, I know. I get that feedback a lot, like, oh, I still have kale from 2 weeks ago, and it's still looking fine.
Yeah. Right, I still have mushrooms in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
I'll be back next week.
Yeah, I got that a lot today, actually.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being here today. This has really been fun. Gail Fischel and Christina Pravazi and Denise Wheeler. And hope the rest of the growing season is fantastic. And Los Ranchos Market is open until all year.
November 14th?
Almost
all
weekly,
year.
And then it goes to once a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the wintertime, it's the second Saturday of the month, and it's from 10 to 12.
And what about Downtown Growers Market?
The Downtown Growers Market, I believe, will go through the end of October. It may also go into the first 2 weeks of November. I think it did that last year. But I'm not positive.
Okay. Thank you all so very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Women's Focus. My name is Carol Voss, and we've just got a couple of minutes left, and then, of course, it's time for Raisis.